Do you ever wonder where all your money went? Like every single time you look at your bank account? Honestly, it's probably all those subscriptions. I felt that way too, until I got Rocket Money. Rocket Money helped me see all the subscriptions I'm paying for, and it was eye-opening. Between streaming services, fitness apps, delivery services, it all adds up so quickly. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has helped save its members an average of $720 a year, with over 500 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/Wondery. That's rocketmoney.com/Wondery. rocketmoney.com/Wondery.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
From 30 Rockefeller Plaza in New York City, please enjoy this podcast edition of Late Night with Seth Meyers. Today's show features Seth's conversation with Republican Senator Ben Sasse, who also takes a few more questions backstage just for this podcast. But first, a closer look at the chaos rocking the Trump White House.
Once again, the White House spent the day in damage control after a bombshell report about President Trump revealing highly classified information to Russian diplomats during a meeting in the Oval Office last week. And tonight, news broke that Trump asked the FBI director to drop an investigation into his former national security advisor, Michael Flynn. For more on this, it's time for a closer look. For the last week, the Trump White House has been desperate to change the story from Trump's decision to fire FBI Director James Comey to literally anything else. And good news, they succeeded.
Tonight, breaking news involving President Trump. Did he reveal highly classified information?
Stunning reports that the President of the United States shared classified information with the Russians in the Oval Office.
Current and former U.S. officials reportedly told the paper the president went off script.
And it doesn't shock me that Donald Trump went off script. This is a man who reads off the teleprompter like it's an eye chart.
God bless the United States of... Sorry, I can't read that last one. Antarctica?
Now, let's just take a second to think about how insane the last 8 days have been. On Monday, we learned that then-President Obama warned Trump not to hire former National Security Advisor Michael Flynn. On Tuesday, Trump fired FBI Director James Comey, which Comey found out about on TV. On Wednesday, he met in the Oval Office with Russian diplomats, including an accused Russian spy. On Thursday, he admitted that he fired Comey specifically because of the Russian investigation. On Friday, he threatened Comey with secret tapes of their conversations. On Saturday, the Justice Department began interviewing new candidates for FBI director. Yesterday, we learned that Trump gave the Russians highly classified information. And today, we learned that Trump asked Comey to shut down the FBI's investigation into Flynn. And if you're wondering why I didn't mention Sunday, that was Mother's Day. So obviously, Trump was doing what all normal husbands do, spending the day alone on the golf course in a different state. Which, in fairness, is the best gift he could have given her. Now, before we get to the news about the Flynn investigation, there's the fact that we currently have a White House that seems to be drowning in nonstop chaos caused by the president's recklessness. And White House staffers seem constantly overwhelmed and unable to deal with that chaos. Last night, a senior Trump aide told the Daily Beast that when the news broke, communications staff and senior staffers at the White House were literally hiding in offices. And hey, that might sound bad, but at least Sean Spicer was hiding in an office and not the bushes like he did last week. In fact, I think we have a picture of his new office. There you go. There he is. According to the Daily Beast, things were so grim in the Trump administration last night that an aide described the scene at the White House as tense and a morgue. I guess that explains why Steve Bannon looks like he's already been embalmed. Dude looks like he gargles with formaldehyde. But just think about how demoralizing it must be to work for Trump right now, a man who has proven himself repeatedly to be temperamentally unfit for handling issues as serious as national security. Even before this latest crisis, working for Trump was already a non-starter for most serious national security professionals. For example, in February, Trump offered the job of national security advisor to retired Admiral Robert Harward. But Harward turned the job down. CNN reported at the time that a friend of Harward said he was reluctant to take the national security advisor job because the White House seemed so chaotic. Said Harward called the offer a sandwich. Fine. If you don't want it, someone else will eat it. Paul? I gotta be honest. I'll eat anything if it comes with tax cuts. That's some good So what about the guy who has the job of National Security Advisor now? That would be Lieutenant General H.R. McMaster. And it doesn't seem like the job is going much better for him. Reporters last night said that after the news broke, they saw McMaster in the White House, and as he walked by the gathered reporters, McMaster said, "This is the last place in the world I want to be." Wow. At least Sean Spicer only says that with his eyes. And just to give you an idea of how big a deal this is, the intel that Trump gave the Russians was reportedly code word information, which is highly sensitive, to say the least. So what could possibly have been going through Trump's head when he did this? Well, apparently, he was trying to brag to the Russians about the great intel he gets, and now Trump's aides are actually defending him by claiming that he probably did not realize what he was doing was bad. A Trump advisor told Politico, he doesn't really know any boundaries. He doesn't think in those terms. He doesn't sometimes realize the implications of what he's saying. He doesn't know boundaries. He doesn't know the implications of what he says. When a ball rolls behind the couch, he thinks it's gone forever. You know, president stuff. Now, obviously, this is awkward for Trump for a number of reasons, especially since he seemed to take the handling of classified information so seriously during the presidential campaign when he was running against Hillary Clinton.
Hillary's private email scandal, which put our classified information in the reach of our enemies, disqualifies her from the presidency. We can't have someone in the Oval Office who doesn't understand the meaning of the word confidential or classified. I don't think it's safe to have Hillary Clinton be briefed on national security because the word will get out. I know at some point they're going to be calling, they're going to want to brief me, but I'm not a talker about this stuff. This is like Watergate, only it's worse. Because here, our foreign enemies were in a position to hack our most sensitive national security secrets.
Of course, it turns out the Russians didn't need to hack Hillary's email server. They were able to hack Trump's mouth. The password is, tell us. Now, Trump's team has tried to claim that nothing he discussed with the Russians was out of bounds. But remember, when Hillary made that same argument, Trump was not buying it. In fact, he insisted that whatever was on Hillary's server must have been highly sensitive and dangerous for national security and rejected her infamous claim that many of the emails were about wedding planning and yoga.
Her staff deleted all the emails and wiped it clean. Why would anybody that's getting rid of emails that had to do with the wedding and also, wasn't it, remember, right? Yoga. Yoga and the wedding. Why are you, when you delete 33,000, I figure 5 for the wedding and 2 for the yoga, right? So that's 7.
Trump thinks it takes 5 emails to plan a wedding?
That's it, 5 emails. 4 kids, 1 wife, same subject line. Let me know when and where. Also, Eric is not invited.
And let me point out, I love that Trump thinks this is yoga. Donald, we're actually doing Downward Dog. Oh, no, I'm just going to do baby hands. My favorite clip, though, is Trump describing in detail what would happen if we elected a president who inappropriately shared classified information.
Hillary Clinton is unfit and unqualified to be the president of the United States. If Hillary is elected, she would be under protracted criminal investigation, likely followed by the trial of a sitting president. This is just what we need. Just what we need. The investigation will last for years. Nothing will get done. Government will grind to a halt, and our country will continue to suffer.
It's amazing. The only thing he got wrong was the president's name. Gotta give it up. This is like, this whole thing is like a horror movie where the police call Trump and say, the killer is calling from inside the house. And also, we're pretty sure you're the killer. So far, GOP leaders have been almost completely silent, despite their supposed outrage during the election over Hillary's handling of classified information. But behind the scenes, at least some GOP foreign policy experts are expressing shock at what Trump did. For example, when reached for comment by Politico, a former senior Defense Department official in the George W. Bush administration emailed simply, WTF. And that's a guy who worked for George W. Bush. The W stood for WTF. Also, pretty soon, Donald Trump is going to exhaust the nation's supply of exclamation points. Soon, we're going to have to tap into our strategic asterisk reserve. So publicly, Republicans don't seem to be budging from their support for Trump. But privately, at least, there are signs that it may be dawning on Republicans that they will be held accountable by voters for every one of Trump's reckless and chaotic acts.
Republicans are no doubt, and you see it in Corker's statement there, others as well, wringing their hands a little bit, getting a little nervous here.
These guys are in a raging panic right now. They recognize that at any moment, so Donald Trump can finally snap and run down Pennsylvania Avenue in a gold Speedo, and these guys are going to be held responsible for his crazy actions.
Yeah, I don't know. If Trump ran down Pennsylvania Avenue in a gold Speedo, I feel like Paul Ryan would just run after him with a bottle of suntan lotion, yelling, "Sir, can I protect you from the damaging UV rays?" And then, just before we started taping tonight, the New York Times reported that President Trump asked FBI Director James Comey to shut down the federal investigation into Trump's former national security advisor, Michael Flynn, in an Oval Office meeting in February, according to the memo that Comey wrote shortly after the meeting. The memo was part of a paper trail Comey created documenting what he perceived as the president's improper efforts to influence an ongoing investigation. So Trump fired Comey thinking that would get rid of him, and instead he just freed up Comey to start telling everybody what he knows. That's like cutting out your victim's tongue and forgetting he can still write stuff down. It's like handcuffing somebody to a rolling chair.
Where did he go?
Just because you put him behind the couch doesn't mean he's not there anymore. We need Republicans to stand up and do something, because right now we got a president who is deeply unfit for the office. Just in the past week, we've learned that he fired the FBI director to obstruct an investigation into his own campaign, threatened that FBI director with secret tapes, gave highly classified information to the Russians, who tried to interfere to shut down an FBI investigation into his former national security advisor. This scandal is like, what's a good way to describe it?
This is like Watergate, only it's worse.
Yeah, that's good. This has been a closer look.
I'm Amber Ruffin.
And I'm Jenny Hagel. Thank you so much for listening to the Late Night with Seth Meyers podcast.
But just one more thing. If you could, please subscribe and rate our podcast.
And review it.
And then call us and tell us you like us in person. Thank you so much.
Our guest is a Republican U.S. Senator who represents the state of Nebraska. His new book, The Vanishing American Adult, Our Coming-of-Age Crisis and How to Rebuild a Culture of Self-Reliance, is in stores tomorrow. Please welcome to the show Senator Ben Sasse, everybody. How are you?
I'm doing well.
Thank you so much for making the time for us.
Thank you for having me.
Now, I want to start with this, and I know this just happened, so you might not have had time to fully process, but there is this report in the Washington Post that Donald Trump, in his meeting with the foreign minister and the ambassador to Russia, leaked some classified information. Do you have any response to that? And again, I know this happened very recently.
Well, when you have the day job I have, it's like every 12 minutes if you're away from Twitter.
Yeah.
It can always be like this kind of a moment, because you don't really know what's just happened. But, I mean, big picture, there's a lot we don't know. But I think three things are relevant immediately. The first is sources and methods are the lifeblood of our intelligence community. And we need spies because the world is a broken place and we need people to protect America's interests around the world. And so we need to, as a people, well before you're Republican or Democrat, care about sources and methods. Number two, a lot of times media does kind of hyperventilate real quickly And it's hard to calibrate some of these stories, which ones are a really big deal and which one are maybe not DEFCON 4. And so we need to distinguish between illegality and imprudence. It's really hard for a president of any party at any time to violate confidentiality laws because he's the ultimate declassifier.
Yes,
that's a different question than imprudence.
This story, I believe the story even says, this is not about illegality, this is far more about imprudence.
Right. And then point three is, it's Russia. And that's not helpful at this time because they don't have our interests at heart. Russia wants to fracture NATO. And there's just a lot about it that's bumpy. And
now, you were someone who came out fairly forcefully against Donald Trump because you did not believe that he stood for your conservative principles. And you, some of the fears you laid out was that you thought that he would erode the First Amendment of the Constitution. We're now over 100 days in. Has Donald Trump met your fears, been worse than your fears, or has he ended up being better than you would have thought he was?
You know, I think we're at a time where there's rapidly eroding public trust. And right now, you have hollowed out local institutions and a politicization of most national conversations. And I think most Americans want to have a political fight between right and left or between Democrats and Republicans that are about a policy continuum that's here, but that's subordinate to a shared civic understanding of what America's about. And right now, we're not having any of those conversations. And I just wish the president would have a focus on 5 and 10 years out kind of stuff. Are we going to have rebuilt a lot of the public trust of a D.C. that usually has 9% public approval?
Yeah, I don't think he's thinking till Wednesday. I don't get the sense that he's planning. He's a long-view guy. I believe the left, and you did not ask for this, but saw in you, oh, this is someone who maybe stands. I know this was not your label, but Never Trumpism was sort of put on you. You were the face of a Republican of principles who was going to stand up to Donald Trump. Yet up to this point, you've voted pretty consistently with one exception on his nominees, on pretty much everything that he supported. How do you balance that?
Yeah, it's a fair question, but frankly, it implies that D.C. is voting on the things that are most urgent or not. This continuum of right to left about policy, it's well subordinate to the really big stuff in American life, and we're not tackling that. We're not having a conversation about the transformation of warfare because of cyber over the next decade, and that's what's coming. When you talk to the generals and when you talk to senior intel community folks, they know that warfare is going to be remade in the next decade. We know that the changing nature of work is going to shrink the duration of jobs. We're not having any conversation about how you migrate our entitlement programs to an era of portability. We're having these fights right here, and the really big stuff is well north of both of these lame political parties.
But you would argue that, you would say that the president is one of the problems that is keeping us down with these smaller issues, yes?
I don't think the president is outlining a long-term vision for the country right now.
Now, it seems as though Russia is getting in the way of a lot that's going on right now, a lot of the more important issues that it strikes me that you would rather deal with. A lot of people, a lot of Americans want some sort of independent investigation into Donald Trump. Do you support that?
I haven't yet called for a special counsel or a special prosecutor, an independent counsel, partly because I think one of our long-term challenges is restoring trust in some of the institutions that we have. The FBI is a perfect example. It's a really important agency in American life, and we need the FBI not to be politicized. We need to have the American people believe they can trust it. I also think that about the Senate Intelligence Committee. Richard Burr, Republican of North Carolina, Mark Warner, Democrat of Virginia, these are actual adults who can work together and don't start with their Republican or Democratic labels. We need the Senate Intelligence Committee to work. I don't forestall a future discussion about independent counsel or special prosecutor, but I think people need to recognize it's not going to be a panacea, because when you do that, somebody will have to appoint who that person is. If it's a three-judge panel, two of the judges will have been Democrats, one will have been a Republican, and then we'll start saying these are political hacks as well. The long-term challenge we face, and frankly, the end game that Russia has, is trying to exploit our internal divisions. And right now, I care a lot about 2016 and the retrospective look at that. I've pushed hard for there to be more investigation and for it to move more urgently. But the thing I'm really worried about is 2018 and 2020, because the technology around Russian cyber attacks on America is only going to get better and better.
Republicans have the presidency, they have the Senate, they have the House. You're talking about this erosion of trust. What are you guys going to bring to the table to help restore trust? What is something, and again, I know it's not simple, but what's something you propose that could help us have more trust than we currently have.
Yeah, well, there's not any piece of legislation that's going to rebuild trust. I mean, we need to understand that we live at a weird moment in history. Lots of it is the digital mobile revolution, which is interesting and going to create lots of economic opportunity. But it's also creating a media environment where more and more people can just surround themselves with a silo that's an echo chamber of what they already believe. And we'll talk to each other less and less and less and become more and more sure that the 2 million listeners or viewers that we watch with are the same people. We need some broader conversations about a whole bunch of stuff that's not chiefly and primarily political, because politics isn't going to comfort people in their old age when they're lonely. There's a whole bunch of stuff that's about restoration of trust in community, and a lot of that has to start locally. And if we pretend federal politics can fix all that, we're lying to ourselves.
I want to talk about your book. You are a parent of three.
I am.
And you sort of talk about toughening your kids up a little bit, giving them a sense of a day's hard work. And you sent your daughter off to a ranch.
We did.
Was this helpful? Do you feel like she learned something at the ranch that she wouldn't have learned otherwise?
Oh, amen. She suffered, and it was good for her, and she knows it was good for her. I mean, she got Nebraska's largest cattle state in the union. We shipped her off last year as a 14-year-old to help deliver baby cows. 600 cows were going to come in that month. And she had to, at midnight and 3 a.m., at 6 a.m., go out there and try to help these mama cows deliver. And she got a rubber glove that went to her shoulder, and she didn't know that was going to happen. She didn't know she might lose a watch out there.
Wow.
While helping with one of these deliveries. And she had a life-changing experience. And as I traveled Nebraska in the weeks and months after that, I'd take all of her texts and I would convert them to tweets. I just made up hashtag from the ranch. And I announced to the world whatever ick factor came from my 14-year-old daughter. And everywhere I went in Nebraska, people didn't want to talk politics. They wanted to say, how can my kids suffer too? Give me the cell phone number of the rancher.
That's great. Now, you and your wife, Melissa, is it?
Yes.
I have to say, I feel like your children are very lucky. They obviously, from reading this book, you care a great deal about them. And even when you send them off to put their hands up a cow, it is lessons. It's for life lessons.
It's up a cow out of love.
And I only ask this because you are in government. What about the kids that do not have parents as good as you and your wife? Like, what do you say to those kids who aren't going to have them making choices, parents making choices for them?
Great question. So I think this book is written for parents and for grandparents and for neighbors and for aunts and uncles. I think the American people want to have a question about how we can do a better job to serve our kids by helping them know that we should celebrate scar tissue. Scar tissue is the foundation of future character. And I think a lot of American parents want to have this conversation about how we help our kids transition out of the nest. Right now, it's sometimes hard to tell 10 and 15 and 20-year-old kids apart. And that's a new thing in human history, this category of perpetual adolescence. But this isn't just about the perfect, you know, idyllic Olin Mills nuclear family. This is about communities and neighbors who love the children in their place.
And I say this as a compliment to the childhood your children had. I do think the scar tissue they have, even when they go off to a farm, is a lot less than the scar tissue of children who grow up with less.
I agree.
And I would just say that I know you're not a believer in big government, but I do feel like the government could do a little bit more for the kids that aren't lucky enough to have the sasses as parents.
I hear that.
And I also really appreciate you making the time. It's great to have somebody who I respect, because I do believe that you have principles and you stand by those principles, and I hope you continue to do so, even though I think we disagree on a lot of stuff. But thank you so much for being here.
Thanks,
Senator,
for having
me. I really
appreciate
it.
Thank you.
Senator Ben Sasse, everybody, the Vanishing American Adults in Stores tomorrow.
Hey, everybody, this is Henry from Late Night. I am backstage with Senator Ben Sasse. So you're here tonight, obviously, to promote the book, but you have another way to promote the book. You threatened on Twitter to tweet out Nickelback lyrics if you're not selling enough books. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, well, this isn't a game. I mean, they're the third largest national security threat of our time. And as I've been getting to know Seth, I like a lot about him, but the fact that he has never taken a clear position on Nickelback is something that his kids and grandkids will ask him about for generations. I think people are going to say, where were you when? And it's going to be about whether or not you stood against Nickelback. And I think it's clear we should build the Northern Wall.
And your staff let me know that Nickelback might be coming to your home state of Nebraska. You have some plans for that.
Yeah, I'm going to protest. I mean, it's one thing when Nickelback crossed the border into North Dakota, and I don't think any of us really thought that they would come to South Dakota. And then there's signage up in Nebraska. They plan to be there in July, and I plan to be out front. Exactly what kind of weaponry we'll have isn't clear, but we invite Seth to come and join us in the protest.
Okay. In the book, you talk a lot about the importance of hard work. You yourself have this really busy job as a senator. You also drove Uber to learn about the sharing economy, as you've said. What was it like driving Uber as a senator?
It was great, actually. Yeah. I love doing work tours with my constituents. I love to travel Nebraska and do work. But it was also great to particularly drive Uber after Nebraska football games when undergraduate students would come out of bars and be really stunned that their senator was there driving their car. And I think, frankly, they were confused about the legislative executive branch distinction. They thought I might be there as a part of law enforcement.
Oh, sure. How many people recognized you?
Initially, you know, a couple of the first couple of students didn't, and then accidentally the thing started to go viral as people would tweet out pictures of my Uber profile, which 5.0 by the way.
Yeah, Ben. Oh, exactly. 5.0, congratulations. Yeah,
yeah. I mean, it's really more like 10,000. People tell me it's fantastic, the best Uber rating ever, believe me. but once it started to go viral that day, then people were recognizing me, and then I think they wanted to be really clear. They wanted to be as solid as they could to not vomit in the car if they were drunk from the bar. Because it turns out, if you throw up in an Uber, fun fact, you get charged $150, and the driver gets that $150.
Right. Which is such an incredible way to meet constituents. Such a unique, weird way, but a really special way.
All of a sudden, they're captive with their senator for 9 minutes, and they didn't pre-plan what they wanted to tell you about. So when you say, what are you worried about in American public life, they tend to just have to go with the truth, not some pre-cooked political message. So it was informative.
Fantastic. Thank you again for being here.
Thanks for having me.
It's a pleasure meeting you.
Thank you. You as well.
Want more Late Night with Seth Meyers? Be sure to follow the handle at Late Night Seth on Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, Instagram, and Snapchat. You can also watch full episodes of Late Night at LateNightSeth.com or on the NBC app. And please tell your friends who are fans of Seth Meyers to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes.
Look around. You can find cars like these on AutoTrader. New cars, used cars, electric cars, maybe even flying cars. Okay, no flying cars, but as soon as they get invented, they'll be on AutoTrader. Just you wait. AutoTrader.